Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 743, and we are recording it on Thursday, January 30th, 2025. My name, Martin Spriggs, and you've joined a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. And joining me, as usual, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally Draper.
As usual, that's like my prefix to my name or something. I hear that quite often.
You are very reliable, consistent. You show up. Yep.
21 years. I'm celebrating my anniversary at Wells this week.
Steady. Steady Eddie. Yep.
Getting those LinkedIn congratulations for
really?
All those years. Yep.
Okay.
So. Nice.
Yeah. I have mixed feelings about LinkedIn and all the congrats you get through that. Sometimes it seems kind of superficial because sometimes the person receiving the congrats doesn't even know it, but apparently, you know, LinkedIn told you. But 20 years, that's 21 years.
That's right.
That's a nice milestone.
Yes, it is. And I had to put up with you almost the whole time, Martin.
I know. That's what makes it a milestone. Yes. Speaking of putting up with people, no, I'm just kidding. We are joined by I should talk Jason Schmidt first after that comment. But hey, Jason, how are you?
That's fantastic, Martin. Like that seriously just made my life.
Right?
I am so glad that you said that on the recording. This is fantastic.
Exactly. Jason, thanks for joining us. And Rachel Reno. Professor Rachel Reno, I can't get used to saying that, and maybe you probably aren't used to it yet either, Rachel. But congratulations on the nuptials. And
thank you.
And it looks like it's official because down in the bottom left corner of your Zoom video, it says your new name. So thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Happy to be here and happy to put up with Jason for at least a little bit longer.
Yeah. Not 21 years, but feels like it.
You know, it really does feel like that. You know, you mentioned what is this like? This is 743. I think my first podcast was like 130 something. So,
right.
Like this
goes back a long time.
This has been a long time. Yeah,
for sure. You were teaching in Omaha at the time.
I was. Yes,
or maybe even Florida. I think we might.
No, I think this was. I think that was when I was already in Omaha.
Okay. Very good.
Anyway, we love having Jason and Rachel on, even though we tease the heck out of them. Because we talk about educational technology, and we've been specifically talking about the technology integration framework called SAMR, S-A-M-R, and we'll go into a little bit more, if you're joining us for the first time, what all that's about. But different aspects of it, and I'm kind of jazzed about the topic for today. Even though some might cringe, it's budgeting and procurement because some of these technology things cost a little bit and you've got to make some smart decisions, right? Got to find the money, spend the money wisely, justify the money. All those things are a part of the process and what a good technology integrator and director, whatever your position might be, has to worry about. So where would you guys like to start when talking about budgeting and procurement?
Well, this is kind of a topic that's near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, Jason, mostly, you get really excited about this in pre-show planning.
Well, yeah, I just get really worked up about it because like, I'm like living this right now. So this is the time of year where we're starting our procurement cycle and like, you know, what things need to be replaced, all of those kinds of things. And, you know, working where I work, we have the resources and the people available to be able to do a lot of these things. And I have a, a lot of the conversations that I've had with Wells teachers or Wells technology coordinators or those individuals who have those responsibilities is, there's so many other things going on that like are part of their responsibilities that it's difficult to focus on these kinds of things. But really this kind of planning and just paying attention to what's going on really can have a huge impact on the day to day with learning outcomes from students if it's intentionally planned and done well. And then also, like, it's a good use of resources.
In our pre-show conversation, I thought it was interesting because you talked about, reevaluating one-to-one programs and those kinds of things. And it seems like a nice tie-in to SAMR is you're kind of climbing the ladder. You're making some of those decisions, not just based on getting technology into place. You know, hey, it was pretty easy back in the day. Everybody just needs a Chromebook to... Now that they have these technology choices, what is really going to make that modification or redefinition grade? How do we get there, and how that informs the decision? Where maybe 10, 5 years ago, even that wasn't necessarily the case. So you're hopefully working smarter about this.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that SAMR conversation really hopefully is driving some of these decisions that we're mm-hmm. making about the equipment that we're purchasing, right? So, you know, and it's so this is not to say that it's a bad thing to be at the S level of SAMR, but you know, we had this huge infusion of resources and during the pandemic, right? And part of what was used for was to purchase devices like Chromebooks and things like that. Well, you know, it's kind of crazy to think about it, but that was almost 5 years ago now that we're coming up on a 5-year anniversary pretty quick here. And that's about the life cycle of a Chromebook. So, you know, with all of these investments that people have been making, has that changed the way that you're doing things? And, you know, if not, then maybe we need to think about maybe we need to rethink the investment when it comes to refreshing those things. So, you know, this is I can't believe I'm saying this on a recording, but you know, the technology is not always the best answer, right? And if the only thing that we're doing with our Chromebooks right now is we're just using them to fill out worksheets, it might be time to think about, we probably don't need to use Chromebooks for stuff like that. If all we're going to do is worksheets, we need to take a look at our teaching practices and how are those things being like changing the way that we do it, or are we just making it harder on ourselves logistically?
Yeah, I can imagine the variety of teachers that are involved and all the different skills that they bring to the table. So we were actually members in the Milwaukee area, and our church even called on us because they had a set of old iPads, and my husband and I kind of revamped those iPads and had, you know, 25 iPads on our home Wi-Fi trying to get all the codes and things installed on them. So that was a fun little adventure. But at the time, it was kind of a desperate move. We needed to connect with these kids. They weren't in our classrooms every day. They had to have some way to connect. And probably some teachers even learned to use it the wrong way, like because it was just a stopgap. It was just, you know, desperation almost. There were probably some who didn't even quite understand what they had and maybe haven't even used it to its fullest even 5 years later. I don't know. I'm guessing. Probably a fair assessment.
No, I'd say that's definitely the case. The pandemic was a time where you kind of, I don't want to say we put best teaching practices aside, but you were just doing what you needed to do to get things done. And so I feel like my role, and Jason, you can maybe correct me if, well, you can't correct me if I'm wrong, because it's my feeling, but you can tell me if you feel the same way.
Your feelings are probably wrong, Rachel.
That in, you know, in the past 7 to 10 years, my role as a technology enthusiast has really shifted quite a bit. I feel like we had to be more of a technology cheerleader in the, you know, in the past when people were so hesitant to even touch the technology. And now I feel like I've kind of had to shift because the technology is getting used for just basic, boring, it's being used to support bad teaching practices in some cases. And so that role has shifted to, okay, we need to really actually look at how you're using the technology for your teaching. And if you're not using it well, let's go back to the pedagogy and think about what you're actually doing in the classroom.
Well, and I would take that even a step farther, Rachel, and I would say, like, even if you are using it well, we still need to go back to those sound instructional practices, right? So, you know, when we're talking in relation of SAMR, like, that also could, it has like a loose translation to, like, when we talk about Bloom's taxonomy, right? And those higher order levels of thinking, like, again, we don't live at the top of the pyramid, you know, but we visit there. And, you know, if we're not planning for the teacher capacity to be able to move on some of these different things, they don't even necessarily recognize the possibilities. And that's kind of where the SAMR model comes into this, into this planning part of it. So that we can really think about, like, where do we most effectively leverage our resources to get the most impact out of the things that we're doing, and whether that's on professional development. So we're like teaching teachers how to use these things and to use the tools that we already have and building capacity that way. Or, you know, is it reinvesting in different tools? Maybe a Chromebook's not the right tool. Maybe it's an iPad. And maybe if it's an iPad, maybe we don't need an iPad for every single student. Yes, maybe we do have iPads, but we've got to avoid app vomit, where we have like 700 different things and kids are scrolling and screen, and like, oh, okay, like, I'll do this, you know, educational game where I'm cutting characters' hair or something like that, right? I mean, there are a lot of different ways to approach this. But I think the key thing that people need to keep in mind is when you're going through this process, you need to identify what those priorities are and then allocate resources accordingly. Because if we want our teachers to move up that SAMR model, now, okay, what resources, support, structures, materials, all of those kinds of things, what do we need to have in place in order to meet those objectives?
I really liked that haircutting game, Jason. It was really fun.
It was really fun. They made weird noises.
Yeah, it was really great. Yeah.
What was that? Toka Hair Salon, I think is what,
yes,
it was called.
That's totally, yes, what it is. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's probably still on my phone.
Probably, yep.
Why does Edward Scissorhands come into my head?
I don't know, but you can't name the show App Vomit. That's off limits.
That one's off the
Sorry.
List.
Right. We have talked in the past about maybe we're at a place where technology equals something bad. There's a sentiment that, you know, the kids are spending too much time in front of screens. It's maybe making them more stressed out, more anxious than they should be. We need to, you know, ratchet this back. Is that because of the misuse, or is there something deeper there when we think about how to kind of balance that concern? What does that look like in the classroom as we're making decisions, we're making choices on procuring screens and one-to-one kind of decisions? And, you know, we're hearing about schools banning cell phones in the classroom, and, you know, it's front and center. How do you go about working through that?
So go ahead, Rachel.
I think that's a, you know, a really appropriate and timely question. With the advances in AI and I had a student ask me the other day, is IXL math class? You know, can we just, for math class, put your students in front of IXL or Khan Academy or whatever it is and call it done? And what do you miss when that's your answer to math class? You miss any sort of personal connection or a, you know, a teacher saying, hey, you worked hard to figure out that problem, or, you know, all you're getting is that superficial fireworks on the computer screen, you know, this, the same superficial stuff when Mario rescues Princess Peach, whatever her name is. And I think that we, you know, God did not create us to be beings that just sit in front of a screen and talk to other computers. We are created as relational beings from the very beginning. And I think we saw with COVID the dangers of what happens to our students when that is taken away. Unfortunately, technology has advanced to a point where it's pretty easy to take that human interaction away, because in some ways the computer can do a better job than the teacher, excuse me, of figuring out the level of the student and what they're trying to, what they're having issues with. And so how do we keep that personal connection in the classroom and still allow our teachers to leverage that those benefits of technology?
Yeah. And, you know, you're kind of striking a nerve, I think, for a lot of people, Rachel, with the, you know, with the, that the social interaction piece. Like, why is it, you know, if you think about it, like, why do kids come to school, right? They don't come because they love math or because they can't wait for English class, right? You know, that's not, they come because they love their teacher. They love their classmates. They love Jesus and they want to learn more, you know, about like those, like that is why it's the relational piece that keeps kids coming back. Like that's the motivator, right? And I think, you know, I think the damage that we've done to kids has gone beyond just COVID. Like I think that exacerbated any of the issues that were already there. But in our area, like a lot of parents and a lot of teachers are picking up the anxious generation. And the message that they're coming away from with that is that kids spend too much time on devices. But that's not really it. Like it's not the fact that they're on devices that's a problem. People have been doing this for a long time. You know, I think about like knowledge workers and people working at laptops and computers and sitting in front of a computer screen in an office setting. We've been doing that for you know, 30, 40 years where that's been the norm of just work. It's not the screens themselves that are causing that, but it's the kinds of things that people are doing with them. And that's, again, where the SAMR model comes in, right? So like what kinds of activities are we doing on these screens? If it's just IXL and kids are like tap, 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 you know, like, oh yay, I got stars. Woohoo. Like, oh, I'm doing math problems at a seventh grade level. I'm in kindergarten. Like I'm super smart. I can do all of these things. But then you take them out of that situation and you put them into something different. They can't apply any of that knowledge. So what benefit did they receive from going through that process, right? So really, you know, we need to focus on the intent of what we're trying to accomplish with these devices. Get to those higher order thinking skills, get kids working together, get kids talking together, get them producing things that is more than just an answer to a question and then move on to the next thing or personal accomplishment or any of that kind of stuff. But like what are we going to do to have kids interact with content with each other and produce something that is way better than we would have been able to do without the technology? And that's how SAMR guides those conversations. You know, we're talking about teachers and effectively integrating technology. And then once we have that vision, again, that's how we align our resources to say, like, okay, these are the things that we want. Here's what we need in order to be able to accomplish it. And then that helps us prioritize.
I guess I can see a, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
A bigger picture, a whole school kind of picture, where maybe Sammer points to just having great teachers, teachers that care, teachers that know and understand all this good stuff. And then consistency throughout the whole span of the student's life in that teach, in that school system. It feels like a lot of this conversation is directed towards elementary, but it's true, I'm sure, also at the upper elementary and high school levels as well. So,
yeah, kind of a coordinated approach to curriculum has got to be a pretty strong vibe here as you're trying to figure out how this works and, you know, what the objectives are and what the expectations are as teachers get in their own classrooms. This is no longer kind of a, can be a siloed experience where one teacher rules his or her own roost and picks technology platforms, and you know, this plays into the whole procurement and purchasing solution. So giving a teacher $1,000 or whatever and saying, hey, go for it, you know, if you want IXL or you want, you know, this device or that, you know, go for it. I don't think that's wise, and I think there is value in having those conversations and having some kind of coordinated approach to it and enforcing the fact that there is a model here. And, you know, how do the choices that you want to make, you know, where do those fit? So it's harder to do it that way, right? But I think that's where we're at.
But I guess maybe just as a closing thought, at least from my end, is like, I cannot overemphasize the importance of like the presence of a skilled teacher who cares about kids, right? You know, and I think that's one of the huge advantages that our Wells schools have is, you know, pretty, it's like, I can pretty confidently say that the teachers that are there are there. I mean, they're really in it for the fame and glory. But you know, once they get past the fame and glory, you know, it's a love for Jesus. It's a love for those kids. And, you know, ultimately, like, all of the shortcomings that people have in the classroom, you know, this is an earthly education with an eternal purpose, right? So, you know, so that I think is the biggest thing to lean in on. And because we have that, we want to do the absolute best that we can for kids. So if we are running into reluctant staff members or things like that, this can help facilitate some of those conversations that I think really need to be happening so that we can do the best service that we can for those kids. So I'll step down off my box now.
Mm-hmm. And because I want the last word, Jason is absolutely right.
I love it. All right, let's move on. Thank you both for your insights there. It's an important topic. So let's move on to ministry resources. This actually applies nicely to what we were just talking about. And there's a lot of opportunity, but also maybe some confusion around or fear of E-Rate, the program E-Rate. And Jason, you were good enough to point us to some resources there that can help. You want to talk to that just for a moment?
Yeah, for sure. So this is the FCC's website, basically, for the E-Rate program. It's a really great location to learn about how the program works, what's eligible, what's not. This is a program that applies for all educational institutions. Like, you don't have to be a public school in order to be able to take advantage of E-Rate. The important pieces to remember on this is that this service helps with, like, wireless access points or in what we call internal connections. That's category two. But then category one will also help provide a subsidy or a discount on internet access for your school. So it's worth exploring the process to be able to go through this. We're a little bit like the window for evaluating projects is open, but I believe the actual application period, I don't know if you can apply for E-rate funding within 2025 right now, but this is worth exploring if you have some of those larger infrastructure costs that you might need to be looking at, especially as you know, pandemic funding is expiring. This is a good way to be able to get that. Depending on where you are in the country, you can receive anywhere from the minimum discount is 30% and the maximum is 90%, depending on the level of poverty in your area. So, and even if you don't participate in the National School Lunch Program, you can still qualify under the in the program under what the public school in your area has as well. So definitely worth looking into, could be something that would save schools a lot of money.
Excellent. Thanks for that resource, and definitely something that needs to be paid attention to year over year. I mean, it's not just, I mean, it's an annual process.
Correct.
So very good. Let's move on to our tips and picks of the week. Rachel, why don't you lead us off?
All right. So my pick is a book, like I bought the actual book with paper. It's kind of crazy. But it was just released this past month, and it's Elevating Educational Design with AI. And the reason it caught my attention, besides the splashy cover, is because of its co-authors, Catlin Tucker and Katie Novak. Catlin Tucker is kind of the queen of blended learning. She's got has some really great books about blended learning and a great blog. So I've been following her for a while. And then Katie Novak is an expert in universal design for learning, which is a framework for looking at our teaching and how it can be accessible for everyone, no matter, you know, what kind of backgrounds they have or learning disabilities or anything like that. So it's about accessible learning for everyone. And I actually haven't started it yet, because my dissertation chapter is due tomorrow, so I should do that first. But I'm really excited to see how these two education experts who are really focused on strong pedagogy in the classroom are going to explain how to use AI to enhance and elevate that.
Excellent.
Excellent. What are you familiar with her previous works? Is there something you can point our audience to there?
Catlin or Katie?
Either one. You said you were drawn to them because of the authors, or drawn to this because of the authors. Is there something that's worth looking at?
So Catlin Tucker has Katie Novak and Catlin Tucker have written books together before, which I have read and are very good. One is The Shift to Student-Led, Reimagining Classroom Workflows with UDL and Blended Learning, and also one called UDL and Blended Learning. So that's where their two expertise really lie. Okay. With Katie Novak, Carrie Minty and I actually teach a graduate class about UDL with technology, and she's got some really great books. One is UDL Now, which is about applying universal design for learning. Unlearning is a good one that she's written. Innovate Inside the Box, another one about UDL. They have a lot of great books. Pretty much any one that you could pick up by them is going to be worth it.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing that.
Yep.
All right, Jason, you're bringing today.
Yeah. So my pick this week is a tool called Google Learnabout. So this is an experiment that Google has published. It is part of their generative AI kind of additional tools beyond, you know, just like Notebook LM gets a lot of attention, and there are some other things in here too. Essentially this tool allows you to kind of dig into topics that you're curious about, and it works for anything. So you can, you know, if you type in, like, let's say you want to learn about flamingos. So you just in the box, and if you click try learn about Sally, that'll take you into the site. And actually, let's just click on the home. How do I make homemade pasta from scratch? I'm hungry right now. So we want to learn about that. So the way this works is it uses a particular large language model that Google has trained using vetted resources that are like specifically geared towards factual information. So they've checked on these things, they're trusted resources that they're using to generate this content. And then essentially, like, you get the different, it's almost kind of like a textbook layout. So you know, it gives you like some key points. Those are the steps. Here are the different things that I can do. And then if you click on that gather ingredients, the tile there, it will then go through and give you, oh, great, now here you can learn more about that. So it just lets you it's kind of like doing a guided rabbit hole into like different topics. So not, instead of getting lost in search results, it really helps you to understand the content that you're trying to explore. And then the other great thing about it is like it has that kind of layout where it's really like the navigation is really super easy. And then the other thing that I really like about this tool is that you don't need to create an account to do it. Like, you have to have a Google account in order to be able to access it. But it doesn't save any of your history. It doesn't save any of the interactions or anything. This is very much a just-in-time kind of a resource. So, you know, I might be teaching a content or teaching a subject that I maybe need to give myself a little bit of familiarity about. Or going into a conversation where I'm just like, I'm not 100% sure what's going on there. So this is a really good way for me to prep myself for some of that without going into a huge internet wasteland. So fun tool to explore, definitely worth looking at if you have curiosity and you don't want to ask somebody a ton of questions. This is a great way to do it. So Google Learnabout.
Very nice.
It is nice.
So, Jason, is this why you knew so much about this week's topic for the podcast? Because you use this?
No, this week's topic for the podcast, I live that. But tell me we're going to do quantum mechanics next time, and then I'll use this to prepare for that.
You wrote it for Google on that topic.
That's right.
All right. Very good. Thanks, Jason.
Tech and Google on the side.
Just kidding.
Learning.google.com is the web address. So pretty cool. Sally, what do you got?
Well, my pick of the week is an epiphany pick. It's a song that has been in my head over and over and over again, and I'm just in love with it. It's titled Christ Begins. It's in Christian Worship, Hymn 385, written by MLC professor Luke Thompson. I didn't realize that he had written this, but after I started singing it, I had to look up what the source was. So we sang it quite a bit at our church just to get familiar with it over the first few weeks of Epiphany. We had it in worship, and it just really stuck with me. It's a hymn that is at the beginnings of different parts of Christ's ministry, when he was baptized, when he performed his first miracle, turning water into wine, then at Transfiguration, and finally at Ascension. Each verse kind of walks you through these different places where Christ begins different parts of his ministry. And it's just beautiful. I found a version of it sung by the good folks, I believe, at Mount Lebanon Lutheran Church in the Milwaukee area. And so if you would like to hear it, if you haven't, to familiarize yourself with it, it's well worth the investment. I'm working on memorizing all the verses right now because I just love it so much. So it's been on my heart. So I thought it would be worth sharing with our Wells Tech friends. That's what I've got.
Cool. My pick. I don't know if I've picked this before, at least not this aspect of it, but a lot of you are familiar with the Bible app from YouVersion. Just go to Bible.com and you can get a link for it to download on your phone. They've got some kinds of resources on the web, but they really want you to download the app and use it on your phone. But there's a particular feature there that has been around for a while called Daily Refresh. And I do it daily, and you kind of, they've gamified it a little bit, so you get a little streak going. But basically, it's a verse of the day and an image of the day, you know, how they kind of put that together. You can, you know, put those, you know, in your social media or whatever. And there's a video introduction to the passage, and then relevant side passages and things to think about, and then ultimately some prayer resources. Takes an estimate maybe 10 minutes, you know, to go through a daily refresh. And they do it every day, and there's a different video every day, a different passage every day. So it's kind of a nice way to do a biblical survey course of your own. And then just spend some time in God's Word. And, you know, a little reminder pops up on your phone. I bring it up not necessarily because it's always, you know, right on theologically correct material, although a lot of times it is, but just the concept of a daily refresh or a daily something. I can think of maybe scenarios where congregations could do something like this, and I know some do, where they have a little devotional thought or a verse of the day or a prayer that they send out. This would be a great example to look at if you're interested in doing something for your members in a very nice, thoughtful way. So if you're looking at maybe opportunities and different ways to do it and different kinds of content, this would be a great example to look at. All the Daily Refresh on the Bible app. And just the Bible app in general is just an awesome app. That's pick number one. I also wanted to put a plug in. I've started teaching for the second time an MLC graduate course called Enhancing Ministry with Technology. And I'm just rereading, probably for about the fourth time, one of the required texts in that course. And that is How to Take Smart Notes by Sankhe Ahrens. This is, there's a reason why I make it required reading for the students in the course and right out of the box, because it kind of makes or forces you to rethink how you take and why you take notes. If you can kind of think back on your own note-taking history, how many of them actually are useful to you today? Whether you took notes at a conference or while reading a book or in class or listening to a podcast or whatever. He really challenges that whole concept of, you know, how we take notes and what are they good for, and suggests an approach of note-taking that makes a lot more sense for future use. He makes a good case that you are reading a book or you are taking a class, you're attending a conference, you're listening to a podcast for a reason. What are you gonna do with that content? So the whole reason of those activities is to pull something out that's going to be useful in the future. And this book really emphasizes the fact that there are better ways to do that than maybe the traditional systems of, you know, a notebook, a journal, taking notes in the column of a paper, whatever. So I would highly recommend. It's a short read. It's not that long. I don't know how many pages it's got, but it's, you can read it in an afternoon, basically. But I would encourage everybody to take a look at that, How to Take Smart Notes. It's meant mostly for nonfiction writers, which a lot of us are, as we're writing things, blog posts, and as we're trying to teach or educate others on technology, those kinds of things. even writing sermons, those kinds of things. That's nonfiction. So I think this is a great book to get in your hands, at least read once. So thought I'd put a plug in since I'm rereading it again and felt not necessarily needed to justify myself, but it is a good resource. So put that in front of you. That's my picks of the week.
Very good. Next time I'll have to come with two. I didn't know you could do two, Martin.
We have no rules here.
That's true.
Yes. Very open. Community news and feedback. We do have some rules because we must do all these segments, and that's one of the segments we must always do, and that's community news and feedback. So what have we got, Sally, this week?
Just a quick mention from our friends at Concordia Technology Solutions. They're going to have a day full of webinars coming up next Tuesday, February 4th. They're going to be walking through their Church 360 members, Church 360 Ledger, and Church 360 Unite products, each with a 1-hour webinar and 30-minute break between. So it runs from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Central Time next Tuesday, February 4th. So if you're looking for a product for managing your membership, working with your financials, or even a website product for your church, Church 360 covers all of that in these different modules that they'll be presenting. And perhaps you might have those products and you'd like to just sit in on a refresher or learn a few more tips and tricks and things. I'm guessing that the webinar would be well worth your time. So they have forms online, and we'll put links in the show notes to sign up. You don't have to attend all three. You can sign up for them separately and just attend the ones that interest you. But powerful software, cloud-based, which is really nice, so you can get access to it wherever you need to. You can do tagging and things like that. Financial software is super strong, so definitely worth your time if you're looking for that type of solution. Again, it's from concordiatechnology.org, and we'll have links in the show notes to each of the three webinars.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. We also received this past week a question from our WellsTech email address, wellstech@wells.net, Pastor Joel Ponko, and I'm going to struggle for where he's at. I want to say Michigan, but don't quote me on that. We could obviously look that up. He had a question. We're looking into purchasing a portable smart board for our fellowship hall to use for Bible study. I was wondering if you had any recommendations. Thanks much. And we do have recommendations, at least for a good resource, and that's our good friend Chris Hunt at BDJ Tech. We've had a great relationship with Chris for many years, even back when he was with Troxel. He's now with another firm, and he's been servicing a lot of our schools with one-to-one technology and projection technology and smart boards. Put a link in the show notes. But that was my recommendation to Pastor Ponko, that he get in touch with Chris and ask him those questions, because we bought here in the Senate office a couple of boards on carts that we cart around depending on where the need is. And that sounds exactly like what they're looking for their fellowship hall. So good stuff. That just makes practical sense if you've got some portable needs. So, and these carts are, you know, you'd think the heaviness of these boards now is would preclude, you know, putting them on a cart, but these carts are nicely engineered. They have little trays on them and power supplies and all the things. So good stuff. So if you would like to ask a question, make a comment, or have a suggestion for WellsTech, wellstech@wells.net, as I mentioned, is our email address. You can go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. On that page, you can leave a voicemail and leave a comment on a particular show, or click on one of the links at the top for all of the socials that we are involved with. I think that's going to about do it for this week. I want to thank Jason and Rachel once again for their time and their expertise. Really enjoy each show that you guys are on, and appreciate you coming back year after year, even though we kind of give you a hard time once in a while. So appreciate that. And you give each other a hard time. We like that part, though. All right. Thanks, everybody. And thank you, Sally, for all that you do. We're going to have a seminarian on next week from Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary to talk about, yes, you guessed it, artificial intelligence. So tune in next time for that. And until then, blessings on your ministries and work. See you soon. Bye-bye.